Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Bone of the Most Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in a world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. we got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though, what do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, when I built this show tonight, I knew that hate can come my way, but I don't fear hate. You know, I think that the more we talk about it, the more we put the solutions on the table, the more we can educate people in life. You know, I'm 55 years old. I'll be 56 this month. I've never seen so much hate against individuals in life. It's disgusting. It's sickening. And, you know, my favorite quote is when we were young and we played basketball or football in the park, did it matter what color your friends were? So why should we let the politics and the politicians tell us who and what color our friends should be now? With that being said, I want to welcome a tremendous brother of mine, a young man that I look up to, a young man that is full of ambition, wisdom, and heart, one I call my brother, Mr. Jamal Pogues. What's happening, bro?
How you doing, sir? Glad to be on the show again.
Honestly, frustrated. You know?
Yeah.
Frustrated, my brother. I don't get it. I mean, we're living in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we let people on social media, we let politicians, we let everything convey the way we should feel towards each other. And people fall for it. When you look at the way life is now, Jamal, how does it make you feel inside?
Definitely times like this is definitely confusing, but, you know, as a young person in this world who eventually want to bring someone into this world, have a kid of their own, you know, it scares you, you know, definitely because you don't know where the world's coming to. It's definitely, you know, even though I'm 24, from the values and morals I grew up with and then to see where the world is today, it definitely it makes you think about the future, you know, not even just like the future kids, but like just, you know, myself in general. Where is this going? Where's life going to take me? You know, where is this? What's the next pandemic or next crazy thing going to happen?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I've never been on this walk, so each step we take is a new aspect of my life, a new learning lesson for me. You know, it's pretty sad that I did a show with Jalen Turner from the UFC to educate people. And on my show, Jalen said that no life should matter unless black lives matter. And I said, bro, I disagree with you. I said, my mother came from Oklahoma. She's a Native American. She worked the migrant farm worker trail all the way to California just to, you know, to work in the fields and pick tomatoes. She had a second job during the day just to feed six kids. I said, so you're telling me your life is more oppressed than my mother's life? That you've been through more than my ancestors and my mother? And he was like, nah, brother, since you put it that way, all lives matter. You know, you're a young black American man with a huge heart.
For sure.
And a smart mind. You know, when you heard that terminology, no life matters until black lives matter, what was the perspective that came from your thought and from your heart?
I don't know. The way I took it was, you know, we can't say black lives matter until black lives start to matter. And I'm talking about just for our own race, you know. And I'm not saying, like, it's not true or it's wrong, but it's so much hate, so much, you know. So it's not even about the black-on-black crime kind of thing. It's more so we got so much hate as a race itself, you know. And it's kind of like, how can I make anyone respect me, my brand, my color, if I can I want the world to respect me and my color, but we don't do it ourselves. So that's like I said, I thought of it in a different perspective than most people. And I understand what people say. Like, I get both sayings when everybody's like, all lives matter, blue lives matter, or, you know, all lives can't matter till black lives matter. But like I say, I'm going to agree with that statement. All lives can't matter till black lives matter until black people start caring about black people. Until then, I don't think it should be a killing of all people for us to come together, you know? Like, that's just where I see it, you know? Don't get me wrong. Like, I love my people, and I love my skin color, but we need to come together just by ourselves before we try to fight the whole world, you know, and try to make us feel like you should care for us. We should care for ourselves first, you know? Self-love is the first thing. So if we don't have love for our own people, how the hell we expect other people to love us? And that's why I take it.
You know, amen. You couldn't have said it more better. And bro, my mom is probably just as dark as you, if not darker. She's Cherokee.
Yeah.
You know, but it just kills me because what you said is so articulated and so true. You know, I was born in the projects, and up to a certain age, I lived in the hood. You know, now when people say, oh, I'm from the projects, No, I'm talking the projects where if there wasn't a body in your front yard or in the courtyard in the morning, something went right, you know. Every day there was bodies. You look at Chicago, and in a weekend they have up to 46 people killed. There's a break in the system, but I love the way you put it. We have to fix ourselves. We have to fix our own race before we can all come together. We truly do. I mean, I could cry oppression for my ancestors, but I can't cry oppression for me. I wasn't oppressed. You know, I feel for the black American community because, let's face it, you're not African American, you're black American. You know, you're not from Africa. And a lot of people don't understand that distinction. Do you take offense to that analogy, my brother?
No. I don't take that offense. The only thing, like, to let you keep going after this, the only thing I hate, like, when people tell me, because, like I said, I came from the hood, I came from the ghetto, you know, and I did have to work my way out of it. But when people meet me now, they see the way I talk, the way I hold myself up, you know. Like, I have people who will say, hey, you're not a nigga, you're black. But I feel like it's the same thing when we put it together. That's the only time I ever have a problem, but no, I do respect the thing, what you just now said.
Yes. Hey, man, I got the same thing. I got, you're never going to amount to anything. You're never going to be anything. And I got my degree in mechanical engineering technology. I got my master's in engineering science. And I always told myself, because everybody told me I was never going to be anything. And I looked at the environment that I was in, and I wasn't cool with that. So if you could do it and I can do it, why can't everybody else? I think the problem sometimes in society is that too many people come complacent with the government. And they want that check at the first of the month. Now, don't get me wrong. There's people that deserve it. There's women out there that have kids that the daddy left or vice versa. And they can't work because they got four or five kids and somebody's got to watch them because child care is expensive. No, I think they're entitled to be a part of the system. But I think if you were to take a lot of the people off the system that don't truly deserve and make them get up and work, I think you would definitely see a change in all cultures. Would you say that's a fair thought?
No. Like I said, I do respect it. You know, and the perspective that I get from in this sense would be, you know, it's a cycle. It's a broken cycle that's in just in society itself. You know what I mean? And the way it's funny because I was just talking to a lot of my friends, you know, a lot of women in my family, you know, I have a lot of women in my family that kind of raised me, you know, and one thing I can say is when we repeat a cycle, the cycle moves on, you know what I mean? Some of us don't have the greatest dad or we don't have the greatest household and we hope that and we bleed on a future generation and we feed them with this hurt, we feed them with this mindset, this mentality, and we grow up and start believing. You know what I mean? Like if you get hurt, you push your hurt and your fears on your child, and they grow up and they're like kids are pure, and then you put that on your kids, and they start taking on your troubles and your worrisome. So like I say, when this all starts off, and like you said about the government assistance and a lot of that stuff, if we as black people, and I'm just talking about as a black race, and I'm not speaking for. Speaking from other people, I should say, I'm going to speak just for my race in the sense of if we come together, we start and empowering these kids. You know, like I said, when I grew up, you know, I had people who told me, like, and I'll be honest with you, it is racism out there, and I've seen it from fighting, but I had my own people tear me down for my dreams than any other person in the world. So, like I say, it's definitely, it starts from home, and we need to change home, you know, and you're right about that. That's where we start to make those changes when we change at home and start empowering the youth and empowering these kids to do better, to not have to worry about government assistance. Go out there and get the education. Go out there and become the athlete you want to do. Push them in towards the direction of their dreams instead of like I said, I'm going to keep it real. You know, I'm like, hey, man, I'm going to be a friend. I'm going to do, man, nigga, you ain't going to be shit. You know what I mean? Or nigga, that's how we talk, you know? So, man, nigga, get your ass out of here. You know that shit ain't going to happen. That's that white people shit. You know what I mean? Ain't no nigga in that sport, and that's how we talk. So, you know, I could have sat there and believed them and at a point that I did. But what I'm saying is when we start to change the mindset and change the, you know, how we communicate with our youth and start pushing these people, and then we can start to change that cycle. But you're right. It could be a lot of less people on that, on government assistance. But like I say, if we start changing the mindset and start inspiring the youth and the kids and stop bleeding on the people under us that's coming through us. You know, like I said, I got a lot of people under me, and I got kids who look up to me. The only thing I tell them is, I said, you know, I tell them all the time, hey, look at me if you ever have doubt. You know what I mean? If you know me, you know my story. So, you know, like I say, a lot of stuff starts from home, and that's what I feel like is missing in today's society.
Yeah, because like you said, we're born pure, you know, and if you go back and look on one of my posts from a couple hours ago, I said, we're not born of ignorance. We're taught into ignorance. And I truly believe that, you know, and other people would like to selectively use different words, but I chose those and it all has the same meaning. You know, when I had Jalen Turner on, he's a tremendous UFC fighter, tremendous brother of mine. You know, he made a statement and, bro, it dropped me to my knees, to be honest with you. I mean, if we're going to be real, let's be real, because it was a very powerful statement. He said, in the black community, we have to be more than that NBA star. We have to be more than that football star. We have to be more than that fighter. We have to become a part of that system and create change from within.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that analogy, Jamal?
Hell yeah, you need to. When you got kids, like I said, I grew up in Manchester and Broadway. You know what I mean? If y'all want to talk about the dirty, that's one of the places. You know what I mean? There ain't too many people that make it out of there. And you got to realize, like, I just went there last weekend, and they were like, me and this other dude named Sylvester, another guy I know, Calvin, we grew up on that street. And they were like, man, you're the only brothers that ever made it out. you know, and like I said, one went to the military, got really high ranking in the military. You know, I'm fighting. I'm still highly ranked. I think like number two outside the UFC in my weight division. You know, like I say, if you want to make that change, and it's not just through sports. Sports is, like, to me, I think sports don't change a thing because we don't change politics. We don't change the demographic of things, you know. But what I'm saying is with the power we have, we got to start telling these kids, hey, you want to be that doctor, that lawyer, you do it. You know, I tell all the kids, and definitely to my – and I'm not trying to say I favor my black people more than anything. I just know how hard it's going to be when they do face out the world because it is – racism out there, and I've seen it in my career towards myself, but I never let that affect me. I tell them, hey, if you want to be an artist, you be the best fucking artist that's out there. If you want to be a, you know, if you want to be a doctor, be the best goddamn doctor out there. And then when I push that on them, and I push that bar, and you raise that bar on them, and they go chase it, that's what I have to tell them. We have, and you're right, we have to be more than fighters, you know, because like I say, it's a lot of people who look up to us, and how we use our words, you know, people really listen to it. People look up to us, you know, and like I said, I'm trying to push a whole – I'm trying to push two different cities at the same time, one that I used to live in and the one I currently live in. You know, a lot of people look up. They want to listen. They need – people need hope. People need to – you know, they're going to look up to someone in a high position. So our words are very crucial. And even though we might not want to be a role model, we kind of get put in that position by what we choose to do with our lives, you know, definitely with this fighting thing. And we got the looks and – we got the fame and, you know, and all that stuff, whatever you want to call it. So we got to choose our words wisely, and we need to start inspiring people and start making changes. And definitely, like I say, it starts with, you know, with the music, changing the way we listen to our music. You know what I'm saying? Still trying to tell every goddamn black dude out there, fuck a bitch, get money, and kill any nigga around you. Start saying, help your brother out, and let's go get this. You know, tell that kid, hey, man, I was just like you. I was in the ghetto. I was living off of Section 8. You can make it out of here. Look at me. You know what I mean? And when we start changing the message of a lot of our things, you know, people listen. You got a power. So start changing the message, and you start seeing a change in society.
Amen, brother. You know, I'm gonna put something out there because I want people to get a greater understanding of how we look at life, and I'm sure I'm going to be tore down for this show. I could honestly give two shits, you know, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
Because I know the walk I walk. But, Jamal, we've never met each other face-to-face. We were supposed to, but your fight got canceled. We've never met each other face-to-face. We know each other through Joe Daddy Stevenson. We've talked for years. You've come on my show for years. What do you see in me? Who do you see in me? We've never met face to face, but what's your thought process on who Don McGuire is?
You know, honestly, I like the respect. You know, it's not too many, you get, you know, reporting or interviews that let you speak your mind. You know, a lot of people, they try to talk a certain way to get to trap a lot of these these young athletes or people who don't know no better into saying things that's maybe that they didn't want to say or kind of push them in the corner. You know, you always let it, hey, say what you want to say, and you know what I mean? Rather people get mad, you've already said, hey, say what you want to say, feel how you feel, and let me deal with that. Like, that's not your job. You know what I mean? So the fact that I can speak the way I want to speak or and talk the way I want to talk or express myself the way I want to express myself instead of trying to fit into, like, the society, you know, how the society has to be, like, you got to speak this way, you want, you know what I mean, that's not me, or that's not life, you know what I mean, people speak this way, people do these things, so I respect the fact that you hear all sides, rather you agree or not, you know what I mean, like, hey, well, this is how you feel, but this is also how I feel, you know, and like I say, I don't have to go in here, and you have to feel the way I feel, you know what I mean, but it's one of the things, like you ask me a certain topic, I answer it the way I want to do it, and it's no harm, no foul. You know, it's like, it's, hey, that's how you feel, that's how I feel. Cool. Next question. Like I said, that freedom, you know, or not even just freedom, but more so, you know, you make it all right for you to say what you want to say instead of like some of these reporters or interviews who try to make you say what they want you to say or try to make some controversy. Hey, speak how you feel, and we can go from there.
See, I'm glad you brought it up that way because I'm the same man I am at a show, that I am at home, that I am if you meet me in public. I don't change for nobody. And I started out 396th in podcasting, and now I'm the number fourth show in the country. And I did it organically. And see, it's proof, people, that no matter where you come from, you look at Jamal, you look at me, there's many of us. We don't have to let anything hold us back. We need to stop placing blame on others and start placing blame on ourselves. Because the only ones holding us back are ourselves. The only ones that aren't giving ourselves that opportunity is us. You look at Jamal. Jamal went into a sport that is filled with hundreds of thousands of fighters. And he made a name for himself. You know, Jamal, I want to ask you a question that I asked Jalen Turner. In the sport, and because I think the world can learn a lot from the sport, because everybody thinks it's so brutal, but have you ever faced any racial inequality in the sport?
Well, like, meaning, like, if you're asking, like, have I faced it within, like, the company? Or, like,
from the promotion aspect, or from the crowd. Oh, well, I'm not talking about the crowd, bro. I'm talking about the promotional aspect.
Honestly, I didn't take it as racial inequality, but it's for sure favoritism in the sport. Like, you rather have this team win than other team. Or you're pushing this guy more than the other guy. But more so from the promotion part, you know, everybody I've ever fought for, from Contender Series to Bellator to you know, LFA, King of the Cage, I felt like, you know, like I rather it was they wanted another guy to win. I just had to take it, you know. So, like I say, nothing's given to you in life, you know. I didn't really think of it as, you know, racial inequality. I don't think so. I mean, I saw black guys as well, so I don't think it was racial inequality. Obviously people will favor more people over the other, but, you know, like, I have a job to do at the end of the day, and I have to go out there and take it and make people believe in me and make people want to see me more. But, no, honestly, no, I haven't, like, personally for me.
You know, Jamal, you know I love you like you're my blood. We've been doing shows forever. If you had to make a statement, not just to the black community in the United States, and I know your understanding of thinking that you have to fix your culture as a whole before you can speak on anything else, but you're a very wise, young, articulated man. If you could correlate a statement for my listeners and for people that are going through this animosity right now, what would that statement be to kind of uplift them and give them a positive outlook on life?
It's this quote, just because you said that, because I thought of it as soon as you asked me. It's a quote that says you have two ears and one mouth for a reason, you know? And if we learn how to use our ears and listen to both sides, you know what I mean? And I get where my black community is like, you guys are not listening to us. I get where, you know, say, no offense to the white community, where they're like, hey, man, like, you guys are making excuses. But, you know, if you have two ears and one mouth, if you just start to listen instead of trying to talk, over-talk each other and listen, you know what I mean? Like, you'll start to learn a lot about each other. You know, you'll start to realize, like, some of us have the same, not all of us, but some of us have the same instances. Some of us have the same problems. You know, maybe some worse than others, but instead of us saying mine was worse than yours and understand that pain is pain, understand that hurt is hurt, you know, however you feel. If you're sad, sadness is sadness. Rather, it's more or less than the next person. And trust me, I had to learn that as a person myself, because I look at other people, you know, like I had a friend. Like, I'm used to stuff getting cut off, you know, that, you know, phone bill, TV. I'm just saying stuff like that getting cut off. You know, definitely when I had a friend of mine that was white who was crying to me that his phone bill was going to be cut off for the first time in years, I was like, bro, what the hell are you talking about? Like, I'm used to that, like that. But then I started to realize, like, he's never experienced that before. So I had to, you know, I had to pull myself back and be more understanding. Like, I mean, that's not something to worry about, but you know what, I understand, like, you've never had to go through this. I've been through this probably 20, 30 times, so I know how to deal with it. So, like I say, we got two ears and we got one mouth, so if everyone knows how to shut the hell up for a bit, listen to each other. And then once you understand the process, instead of just trying to listen to talk or already have a response, listen, understand where everyone's coming from. Everyone's heard someone feel some type of way. I mean, you know, and it's the way it is, you know. I know some white people don't want to go outside because, or they don't want to say anything to black people because of this whole damn thing that just happened to George Floyd. You got black people who look a certain way to white people because of this certain situation. So it's a lot of animosity, but like anything in life, if you sit down and just talk and understand each other, it'd be a lot better place, you know. And like you said, it is tough times, and I do feel personally that a lot of this stuff, not just exposed it, but it's brought it out, you know. And you realize it's still a lot of tension out there. So people forget, you know. Segregation just ended probably like 50 years ago. You know, it's still fresh. It's still new. So we sit down and start listening to each other, you know, and you know, you got two ears and one mouth. So we start doing that. This definitely will start to make a change.
Yeah, amen, because I always preach God gave us two ears and a mouth for a reason. You know, I love that you came on the show tonight. You're so open and candid about your thoughts. I got to ask you an elephant in the room question, bro, and I hope you don't mind. You don't have to answer it, but it's perplexing more and more every day. And social media seems to be fine with it. I'm not cool with it, you know, but I want to get your thoughts as a strong young black man in your community and then my brother. When you see a video of a young black man telling white people to get down on their knees and beg for forgiveness, what goes through the heart and mind of Jamal Pogues?
Personally, for me, look, this is very vague. I don't think it's right personally for me, but like I say, it depends what if you're asking for equality. Which everyone is preaching, because I have my own personal view, but I understand where the world's coming from. If you're preaching for equality, that's not the way to go. You know what I mean? And I ain't gonna lie to you, I got ugly feet. So if you kiss my feet, you're nasty. But you know what I mean? But like I say, if you're preaching equality, that's not the way to go about it. And I think that was still fucked up to have people kiss me. See, I thought it was funny as hell. I don't know what person in the right mind would do that. But like I say, if you're trying to take a step in equality in that sense of what that's what Black Lives Matter is preaching. And trust me, like, I have my views. I have some ways where I'm like, you know, that was wrong. I don't like this. But that's not the way we do it. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm trying to convince a group of people, a certain race of people, you know, that I want equality, or even like if you're trying to change someone's mind to see where you're coming from, that's not the way to do it. You know what I mean? So, like I say, we're all entitled to our opinions. You know, the way I think about it, opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one, but that's not the way to go. Kissing people's feet and. I don't know what to say about that one. I'm stuck in that one. But trust me, I don't want no one to get in this interview and understand that thinks that I'm not, that I'm on any side. Like, at the end of the day, Don, like, I'm a black man and I'm a die black man. Or I'm a die nigga and I was born a nigga. So I'm always going to pick.
I'm going to disagree with you. No, hear me out. I'm a die, but I know that
that's how I was born into the world, and that's what I'm going to be when I die. But I understand that, like, I can't sit here and say, like, everything that I believe is right. Like, I don't like that kissing feet part. You know what I mean? I also don't like the killing of innocent black men. You know, but I also don't like the killing of innocent men. I'm not on a white person's side. I'm not on a black person's side. I pick each side, and I understand both sides, and I get to pick and choose what I feel like is right or what is wrong. And I you know what I mean? I'm not going to say more of my views is on one side or more than the other. Like I told you from the beginning, that's not how you do it if you want equality, you know, and kiss my feet and post it in public. Now I ain't trying to be mean. I'm a little bit out there. If you want to talk about we want to bring down the white kings and stuff like that, and I'm just thinking of Black Lives Matter movement, right? And they're saying we're bringing down the white devils and the kings. I don't know no goddamn king that's gonna kiss somebody's foot. That's all I'm gonna say. You know, we gotta do it differently. We gotta infiltrate, change the minds of people. I can walk into any room and I can talk to anybody. Whether you're trust me, I had a conversation with a white male who was at 70 years old, and he was a racist man, and we talked, and he said, you know what, like. He was like, I've never talked to a black man, and for sure didn't think I was going to talk to a punk-ass kid, which was me. He said, but I respect, and I'm glad. He's like, you changed my mind. And I'm not saying that's going to work for everybody. But when I said that I had an intelligent conversation, instead of me trying to make a man kiss my feet or trying to hit him, now that's what I'm trying to tell people. You go win with your knowledge and what's in between your two ears, and that's your brain. So you start to use your mind, and you're going to start to understand, like, all right, this is how we can bring these people together. We can do this, but kissing feet and fighting each other, killing each other, that ain't gonna happen. Killing all these white folks, thinking that's gonna make a change. That's gonna bring more hate. That's gonna bring more fear. You know what I mean? One thing I've learned. One thing in the streets is you rather have a man respect you than fear you, because you know if a man fears you, he's gonna do something to you. So, like I say, that whole equality, and that's what we're pushing. That kissing feet thing, that ain't it.
Yeah, and you know what I was trying to get at it with you too, bro, is when I see Jamal Pogues, I don't see no color. I see a brother. I see a man that I would take a bullet for, because I know you would take a bullet for me. I mean, that's just, education is a must in this country. And if we can come together and educate people, then that's a plus. That's a factor. You know, when Joe Biden said, if you vote for Trump, you ain't black enough. Dude, that killed me. But the thing about it is, people, do your own research. It's out there in front of your eyes. If you go to the blacklivesmatter.com and you hit the donate button, it's going to take you to voteblue.com. That's the Democratic National Party. So, wake up and realize that it isn't the people that's creating the hate amongst us. We're all being played, and we have to understand the situation that we're in, and we have to be bigger, better, and more understanding than the people that are playing the cards against us. Because we weren't like this a year ago. Why should we be like this now? You know, that's the whole point. Like I said earlier in the show, it didn't matter what color my friends were when I played football and baseball and basketball in the park, and it sure as hell don't matter what color my friends are now, especially in these dark times. I think we should bring each other closer together and love each other more instead of creating a divide. You know, Jamal, it was a pleasure to have you come on the show tonight and share a part of you that we usually don't share on this show, or that you usually don't speak about. I mean, it's real. This is life. This is what we're living right now. And people, if you don't stop the rioting and you don't stop all the stuff that's going on, there will not be any normalcy to life. You know, that's fact. They will take everything away from us, and we will become a socialist country. And I don't know about you, Jamal, but I want to see you fight, bro.
Hey, I'm trying to. Hey, you feel me? I'm trying to get back in too, man. With all this corona and the murder hornets and all the protesting and giving these curfews and everything, you know, like I say, things are definitely heading in a direction. I don't know what it's going towards. Is going to be good or bad, but like I said, there's a change. There's a lot of changes that need to be done. But like I said, the first thing, you know, we got to change ourselves. You know, and it was a pleasure to be on the show to even just talk about and hear my point of view. You know, and like I said, I'm not picking any sides because I am the dude that came from the ghetto. I am the dude who goes back to the hood and try to inspire my youth and my kids and the people around me. And I also know that I don't have only just black fans and friends. I have white friends, I have Mexican friends, you know, Latin friends, Asian friends. And I got to inspire these kids too, because everyone's individually fighting their own battles. You know what I mean? And, you know, or they're fighting. We all got bad in every race. So, and we're all trying to beat that criteria or that stigma that holds on us. So, like I say, we need to start taking care of ourselves, healing our homes. We need both parents back in the household. We don't need no more baby mama, baby daddies. You know what I mean? We need good family, man and, you know, husband and wife. And like I say, look, and I'm not against the, you know, LGBTQ, however you say it, nothing about that. Love who you love, but we need more love in this world. I'm always preach that, you know what I mean? And like I say, we need love back into the world. Too much hate. I hate the fact that I can see girls shaking their ass and black people dying, but then as soon as I see someone posting something positive, it gets removed by these big companies. I hate all of that. So, you know what I mean? Like, I could go online 2 seconds, see a half-naked girl with her titties out, or I can see a black dude getting killed. You're going to see Mexican, you know, people getting killed. You'll see white people getting killed. I see more killings and ass shaking and titties out on social media than I do anything positive, and nothing positive gets pushed, so... Like I say, I wish it was more love in this world. We need to start pushing more love. And it all starts with us, individuals. And trust me, you know, everyone's going to gravitate towards you because everyone wants to be loved. Everyone wants to feel that love. Everyone wants to feel important. So when you push love, that's why I say my whole team and everything's been built. And I'm not talking about just about my team, by fighting. I'm talking about the people that's around me. It's all love. We push love and do better. And when we push love, and trust me, I got all different types of races around me. So, not racist, like racist, different ethnicities around me. So, and we're all coming together. We're all making a change. And then definitely, as we're integrating all of these barbecues, they're going to start to see different sides of us that they get on TV, on the social media. You know, the big black men at the Asian barbecue, you know, black people, you know, the Asian people are looking at me now like, oh, okay, you guys are decent people. You know, like I say, when you push love and you're positive and you're confident, you know, it's going to gravitate because people are looking for that themselves. So if you have power, you have push love and positivity, you know what I mean? And make everyone feel welcome. And then when you do it that way, you know, you're going to start to see change. And I might not see change by the time I'm dead, but, you know, I guarantee you, if I can inspire 10 people, I know the next 10, that those 10 people are going to inspire a lot of other people. So, like I said, it all starts with us and how we do everything.
Most definitely. Amen. That's a mic drop right there, bro. That's a mic drop. You know, homie, I love you. Thank you for coming on the show and sharing who you are. I'm going to pass the mic to you if you have any friends or family, any social media sites, or any sponsors you want to shout out, bro. The floor is yours, homie.
Thank you, sir. Once again, it's a pleasure to be on your show. I love talking to you. I love at least get to share my message with the world. Guys, stay tuned. LFA, light heavyweight, Jamal the Stone Trooper Pugs. Just be watching there, man. Can't wait to get my UFC contract. I've been training hard. I had some bumps and bruises on the way, but that's part of life. And my message today to America is pushing love, guys. We got to push through this together. It's not about me singling out any other race. It's just, you know, wrong is wrong and right is right. And, you know, what I might find wrong, you might find right, and what you find right, I might find wrong. We got to understand each other's differences. We live two different lifestyles. We have two different upbringings. But you know what I mean? We're not going to move forward with this without, and I'm going to be honest with you, we can't move forward together in a white man's world. So, you know, to my blacks who are trying to, you know, hurt these white people, saying that, you know, that's going to start to change. That's not going to make the change. And, you know, just like we need them, they're going to need us. And just like I need Don McGuire to share my voice, Don McGuire going to need someone like Jamal. I ain't saying he needs me, but he's going to need someone like me to spread that message. Like I said, we all going to benefit one or another. So to the world, man, just hug your loved ones tight. Whatever religion you believe in, I hope you get the message in that Bible. And if you don't believe in anything, just believe in something, you know, just make sure it's love and positivity. That's all I have to say.
Most definitely. I appreciate you coming on, homie. I love you. Give your mama a hug for me. Tell the family hello. And I'll holler at you in a couple of days, my brother.
For sure, sir. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. God bless you, bro. Love you, man. Peace. Ladies and gentlemen, that was a very articulated young man, but I'm running behind. Hopefully, Professor Chris Brennan still answers the phone.
Hello.
Hey, Professor. Sorry, I ran a little bit behind with the first guest. You know, tonight's show,
no problem.
The topic is kind of deep and personal. You know, being that we're in the sports world, when we kind of get an opportunity to share a thought of who we are away from the sport, it's kind of, it's deep, it's enlightening, it's educational. But before we start with the interview with you, you know, I kind of want to let you know, I'm open to any and all things, but I kind of want to let you know where I stand. I did a show a week ago with Jalen Turner, a fighter in the UFC. After we did the show, I was attacked by an organization on my radio page, which is federally funded, and several arrests have been made since then. But, you know, I got threats that they were going to rape my wife and kill my son and hang me from the tree, when all I was trying to do was purely educate people on what's going on in today's society. You know, I'm 55 years old. I'll be 56 on the 23rd of this month. This is not my America. This is not the land that I grew up in. You know, Chris, I know you're a dedicated individual in life, and you show people a lot of enlightenment, and you've created a path for many, and you've never seen color. You've always seen the potential. What do these days mean to Chris Brennan? Not the warrior, but the man.
I mean, honestly, it's a bummer. We're in a really tough time right now, and I've got kids too, right? And so I'm watching our country completely fall in shambles, right? So I'm thinking, what's next for them? Like, I feel like I've accomplished a lot, enough. You know, if I ended right now, I'd be happy, right? But these guys are just getting started. So I'm just like, what is next for them because of the way everything's going down right now? And how I would love to fast forward and see what the end result of all this is, the virus, the violence, the racism, all the things that are going on right now. I'm very curious to see how this looks in the end. But we're in a tough spot right now with everything. So it's a bummer for sure. There's no doubt. No one can do any right at the moment.
No, nobody can. And, you know, like I said, I just had Jamal Pogues on, who fights for LFA, and he's number four, number five, ranked outside of the UFC in his weight class. But he's a very articulated young black American, and I like sharing both sides of every story. But here's a thought that bothers me, and I think you're being closer to my age, you'll get a greater understanding. No matter how ugly our country's history is, erasing it isn't going to change the situation. Tearing down monuments, destroying things, it isn't going to take away what has already transpired. You know, when you look at the defacing of our country, as I put up a post that I took a picture of Mount Rushmore, and I see people destroying the Lincoln Memorial and tearing down every statue. Now they want to tear down the damn Rocky statue because he killed a black man in a movie, a fictional character. you know, it just blows my mind, you know, because it's something that shouldn't have to be. You know, I look at Joe Biden telling people, if you vote for Trump, then you're not black enough. Why has the American society, well, they've always played a role in it, but why has the American society, in your opinion, allowed the politicians to govern the hate amongst us?
Honestly, I think as much positive as social media has done, I think social media has destroyed our country, 100% destroyed our country. The stuff that is out there now and gets spread so quickly and so easily is I think so much of it has done, you know, terrible things for the country. Yes, there's positives, tons of positives, but at the same time, I just think that everyone is so influenced so quickly by what they read and what they see. And before, you had to take the time to sit down, turn your TV on and watch the news if you wanted to get any bullshit, right? But now everyone's on their phone 24/7 and the stuff's just streaming on their phone. And there's so many people right now who are unreasonable. There's people you just cannot reason with at the moment. And it doesn't matter if it's clear in front of their face and you know, facts. It doesn't matter. They do not care to listen to that. They're seeing one thing right now, and it's a problem. You know, it's that one of the things, just to, I don't even know if you wanted to get to it, but during like this guy who just got killed the other night, the drive through that was drunk, you know, this guy, I was impressed listening to the cops talk to the guy respectfully. They were genuine in checking on him and pulling his car over, and they spoke to him respectfully and like they cared all the way to where they're arresting him. They were fine until he changed the direction of the entire thing. And everyone's like, oh, well, if they didn't, you know, the fact is they knew he was black the second he opened the door. They still treated him properly all the way until he started fighting them. And if a white guy was doing that, all the people in the parking lot would have been cheering for the cops to kick his ass, because we take accountability and we would have liked to see the cops kick his ass, right? Because we know the guy's wrong. At that point, that guy's wrong, whether he's black or white. I would love to say that guy was a jackass. If he was white, I would say that because I could right now. Because he's black, I can't, right? But at the same time, that guy was treated properly and fairly. He was breaking the law and still being treated properly and fairly until he started fighting, he ended up mounted on one of the cops punching. Then he ran and grabbed his taser and went to shoot him with it. Should he have got shot in the back? Probably not. But when everyone keeps saying a drunk driving ticket or arrest should not result in your death, well, he didn't die because he was drunk driving. He died because he was resisting arrest and fighting and went to shoot a cop with a taser. What happened if he shot the cop with a taser and the cop couldn't respond, so then he went and took his gun? Like, you don't know what's going to happen next. And someone's like, oh, he responded with a taser to a taser with a real gun. Well, yes, the cop is always going to one-up you. If you pull a knife, he's not going to pull a knife back on you and have a knife fight, right? I mean, he should always one-up you. That's how they keep control of the United States. Like, they're police officers. So are there bad cops? 100%. No question. Was the guy who killed George Floyd an idiot? 1,000%. Had it happened during the struggle, had something happened during the struggle when he was resisting and fighting them, I don't know. I didn't see the entire thing. But at that point, he was cuffed and controlled. You know, that cop was, in my opinion, he was in the wrong. You know, 100% in the wrong. And I posted and said that. But the things that have taken place after that are just, you know, unreasonable, out of control. And again, is there racism? 100%. Sure. You know, there's, is it to the point that a lot of the black people say it is? Absolutely not. I think there are as many black people racist towards white people for the white people that were racist towards them before us. That's going to make it almost impossible for it to ever go away, because they're mad at us for what happened before. So we're mad at them for being that way. And that's just going to go back and forth like a fucking school fight. Like, just back and forth shit talking. And it's frustrating to me because I was born in Compton. I didn't grow up there, but I grew up in Huntington Beach. But my family all lived in Compton for 69 years. My grandparents lived in the same house. tons of black friends. Black ended up in my family, obviously, because they lived there for so long. I have a fight team of five people. Three of them are black. Like, I don't see color until someone talks about it. And I'm not the, oh, I'm colorblind. I understand. But I don't judge anybody ever off of anything except for their actions. So although I understand that it's out there, I don't, if I do see it, I would definitely stand up and fight for them because, you know, I treat everybody equally unless they're a jackass and I treat them like jackass. But it's interesting to listen. I've been really educated in the last few weeks because I've listened a lot to both sides. I've listened to a lot of, blacks that are against everyone white right now. I've also listened to a lot of black people who are trying to educate the black people. And it's interesting to listen to them because none of the black people like the black people that talk bad about the black people. But they have a lot of interesting facts, man. And they're all sellouts, Uncle Toms and Coons, but they're educated. You know, they're educated. And that's one thing that causes the problem. So I've had a good time listening and to both sides and try not to be too judgmental while I listen. But I definitely have learned a lot in the last few weeks.
Yeah, you need to check out a dude by the name of Will Johnson. He's a very educated young black man that speaks the truth. He doesn't care who likes it or not. And he's ridiculed and hated for his thoughts. But, you know,
young kid.
If we can,
I listened to him earlier today.
Yeah, if we can educate one person at a time, then we can make a difference. But see, I don't like the terminology racist because I think it's personal ignorance. You know, we're not born racist, but we're taught to be ignorant. So I think that's a better terminology when you look at it, because racism just even sounds foul. But if you tell a person that they're personally ignorant, it's going to make them stop and think for a moment.
Right.
And that just might be the moment that you can create a talking point and create change. Now let's go back to the individual that was drunk driving. Not only did they treat him right and park his car, they offered to walk him to his sister's house, which was a block away. You know, now everybody seems to forget this man was let out of jail. He was put, I think it was either a 7 or a 9 year sentence, and he was let out on parole because of the coronavirus. He was let out of jail early. So he was already a criminal.
And violated probation.
And violated probation. So, you know, I went through the Sheriff's Academy in California, and we're taught that any credible threat within 21 feet is justified. So if you take my taser and try to tase me with it, I'm going to shoot you.
Right.
You know, there's no justification. And, you know, people will say, well, two wrongs don't make a right. But you know what? For $38,000 a year, I'm going home.
The one in Texas, that would have been a clean shooting.
Yeah. You know, the thing about it is I've been called every name in the book, you know, and I just want people to wake up and understand that when we were kids, it didn't matter what color people we played with as adults, all the way up until this stuff started with Trump. We really didn't even care what color our friends are, and we still don't. I don't see color. I see people. But we let social media dictate our thoughts. People only see half of a story and run with it. You know, there was a young fighter. I'm not going to mention his name. I brought him into the sport when he was 14. And he broke bread on my dinner table not even a week ago, only to have him turn around and call me a racist and slander the American flag. And I mean, I'm cool with him calling me a racist because I will fight my battles. But when you say that we need to tear down the American flag and destroy the flag and create a new one, that's where I got a problem. As I said earlier in the interview, no matter how ugly our history is. You can't erase it. But one thing I won't tolerate is the degradation of the American flag. You know, that flag means something to me. Each and every person that has went and fought for this country, their blood is on that flag.
Yep.
So how can society sit back and let something so sacred to you, me, and many veterans out there, and be content and happy with the country moving to one that, you know, basically dismantle and tear down our flag, Chris?
They're not talking about doing that, are they?
Yeah.
Who is?
Black Lives Matter.
Right, but anyone that matters that's actually going to change something like that is not going to... I'd move to a different country at that point, you know? I mean, if we're going to bow down and...
But
I'm hoping that we don't... Yeah. Oh, I get it, man. We're in a... Trump's being taunted, no question, right? Like, they're doing everything they can to get him to respond how he actually should be responding right now and isn't, so they can say, oh, look what he's doing, look what he's doing. You know, there's a video of some cops in a car the other day, and kids are beating it on with a skateboard, and the cop gets out and whoops this kid's ass, and all you hear is this one guy, look at a cop, look at a cop, look at a cop, look what a cop's doing, look at a cop. The whole time, that's all they wanted, so they can get their friggin' footage on their cell phone. You know, but that kid deserved to get his ass whooped, and so did the other. There was two of them. And who cares what the cops do at that point? Why are you beating on the cop car with a skateboard while they're in it? So, you know, they're doing the same thing to Trump. Like, all this is to get him to respond and come in with lethal force so everyone can be mad at him for doing it. Well, he should do it at this point, you know? But, of course, the timing is pretty odd right now with the election, so now he's kind of stuck, should I or shouldn't I? But, people are getting away with a lot of stuff right now that shouldn't be, you know, shouldn't be happening. And we'll see how much longer it goes on. But there's going to come a point where the actual citizens of the United States are going to step up, and that's going to change a lot of things.
I hope so, because what they did to the Lincoln Memorial and other aspects of history is just, it's broken my heart. You know, I'm Native American and Irish, and you know, I'm 55. I've had a taste of oppression. I know what it is to be poor, but I can't speak to my ancestors. All I could do is create a better future for my family and future generations. You know, you brought up a talking point earlier that a lot of young fighters that have been coming on my show lately have truly said, you brought it up about your kids, but I've got young fighters that said, I wanted to have a family, but now it's not going to happen.
Well, can you imagine someone who's just having a kid right now, what's going to happen when they're 10, 15, 20? We don't even know what's going to happen with our country, between the next 5 years. So the next year. So it definitely is not a smart plan if you're in control of that right at the moment.
No, it's not. See, you know, I wish people would wake up, and I mean, because we truly are living in a movie. You know, you look at the beginning in 2016. They didn't want Trump in office. I didn't vote for Trump. I wasn't a staunch Trump supporter. I'm not a staunch, you know, Trump supporter now. You know, but I watched the man. And I watched the man be attacked for 3 years and do tremendous things for this country. And
he did.
So they played the race card in the beginning. It didn't work. So they brought out the Russian collusion. That didn't fly. The impeachment. That didn't fly. And now they're playing the race card again. You know, people want to talk about Floyd, you know, and conspiracy theorists. You know, I'm a good friend with Pat Miletich, a man who you faced in the cage many times. But, you know, I sat and I've listened to him, and, you know, conspiracies don't seem so far-fetched anymore. I've watched 9 different full videos of the whole Floyd incident. And there's differences in every one of them. Yeah. You look at, they say that Chauvin and Floyd worked together for 17 years. That 2 weeks before this happened, Floyd had fired Chauvin, and what is ironic is Floyd's demise, if it did in fact occur, happened outright in front of the strip club restaurant that they both worked at. I mean, it's a little ironic. When you start putting all the dots together, it doesn't look so pretty. You know, and a lot of people, yeah. conspiracy theorists are saying that, you know, because all of a sudden Floyd has a twin now. You know, and so when you look at all those aspects and you listen to every, you know, conspiracy theorist and you fall down every rabbit hole, you know, it kind of makes you wonder if the American people weren't set up for a great divide, you know, from the left or from the middle or whatever direction. But what do you think? I mean, because you're a very well-educated man, you speak to the masses and people truly respect you. You know, what do you think we can do now as people to start to create change in this divide?
Real quick, just to go back to your George Floyd and Chauvin incident. The very first time, and I'm not a massive conspiracy theorist, although during all this COVID, I've you know, kind of looked into a lot of things, but the very first time I watched the video, I thought that the cop, Chauvin, is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Looked to me like he already knew he wasn't going to be in trouble. Like, I felt like he knew what he was doing. He was staring at the camera. He glanced down at George one time. It was such a perfect setup because there was a black guy, a white guy, an Asian guy, and a Mexican guy all on there or involved. So instantly race goes out the window. So he can't be charged with racism or accused of it at that point. Like it when it goes to court, I just thought there were so many perfect things that it was really weird to me. The way he looked as I was watching it happen, I was like, what is he doing? And he just sat there and did not give a shit what anyone was saying around him. You didn't see what you would sometimes see if your partner's going a little crazy. No one leaned in. I'm like, hey, that's enough. Hey, that's enough, bro. And like kind of tapped him. Like no one did anything at all. And then the ambulance rolled up. They rolled him on the stretcher and off he went. And it was just the whole thing. And I didn't even know anything yet. I hadn't, it was the very first time I watched a video. But I'm pretty articulate when I watch something. I was very interested in watching. And so I was already like, man, that was really weird. Like, yes, completely screwed up. That guy should go to prison. He killed him. But then as I watching it, I was like, but it was really weird the way he did it. You know, he didn't care that there was people around watching. He didn't care that he was being filmed. He didn't care that... You know, he never checked his pulse when the one lady was saying she was a nurse. Just check his pulse. Just do me a favor. Check his pulse. Just check his pulse. He didn't care. Like no one cared. So it was very weird to me that the way it went down, you know, so we'll see what all happens when this, you know, as this unfolds. If that guy doesn't get convicted, God knows what's going to happen in this country. But, you know, if he does, what was he convicted of? Like, I'm just real interested to see how that ends, just because of the way it went down and the way he seemed to not care. Now people are posting pictures of the guy who's arrested that doesn't look like the cop. You know, like, there's so many different conspiracy theories about the whole thing now, so I don't know. It's wild.
But here's one thing that you can go back and look at and make a intuitive thought to yourself. Go back and watch that video. And you'll see when the ambulance pulls up,
yep.
They're not EMTs. They're police officers.
Yeah, I never saw an EMT.
Yeah, they're not. You know, a lot of conspiracy theorists are saying that these were crisis actors and it was played out to cause a controversy to take down Donald Trump. I don't know if it's true. I'm not going to state that it's fact because I don't know it's fact. And as a journalist, unless I know it's 100% factual, I'm not going to say it is. But I got to tell you, the more I look, there's something just not right with it, bro. I mean,
I agree. I thought that, like the very first time, it was all super strange to me. And let's just say that it was the Democrats, it was Hillary, it was all them trying to set Trump up. Can you imagine if she was our president? Like, is that really who everyone wants to be our president right now? If that side's what's going on right now with all of this divide, you know, everyone's blaming Trump. The last person in the world that wants all this happening right now is Trump, right? This is the one thing in his 4 years that is going to prevent him, if it pans out, to not be reelected. Because going off of all that he's done, whether he's said stupid things or not, he's changed the United States, the economy, the unemployment. He's changed a million things, a lot of things. So they had to do something. So if that really is the other side that's causing this divide between everyone, that's pretty scary. That's pretty scary if that's who ends up being our president on the other side, you know, Biden and but everyone who's, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Well, Biden can't even complete a coherent sentence. So,
yeah.
You know, and the other thing that really pissed me off, and I don't understand why the black community wasn't more outraged about this. You know, he said if you vote for Trump.
His comment?
Yeah, if you don't vote for Trump, you're not black enough.
Yeah.
What the hell? I mean, come on. You know,
that was his way of getting to them right off the bat, right? Like that was his. We knew we were going to the race war at that time. That was kind of the start of it all when he said that.
Yeah, and then there's an aspect about life that not many people know about because, you know, with American politics, whenever you have a problem, it's generally a smokescreen to cover up the true issue. And you look at child and sex trafficking in our country. You know, President Trump for the last 3 years has been going after sex traffickers and, you know, arresting people. I think there's 1,800 sealed and unsealed indictments out there, ranging from everybody from Oprah Winfrey to you name it. And, you know, by the time this is all said and done, in my personal opinion, I think Trump is going to win in 2020, but I think he's going to go down as one of the greatest presidents in American history. Because I think the deep state is going to be exposed, and I think the world is going to see it for what it truly is. You know, the reason
the problem is, if he doesn't get reelected, all that stuff's going to go away. We're not going to hear about all that, the trafficking and everything else. All that's going to go away.
No, we're screwed, you know, because a lot of people that live in Vegas don't even know that there's tunnels under Vegas, and people have lived under there for years, and, you know, there's tunnels all over America, and I follow that very deeply, and so far, quite a few children have been saved. You know, people think the ships were put off the coast of California and the coast of New York for COVID patients, when in reality it was for the children that they were saving. After the show, I'll send you some links on that, because that's factual information. You know, the reason I wanted you on the show tonight is because you're a man that is not short on words. You're a man that tells it like it is. You're a man that I truly respect. And I see a true patriot in you. I see a man that really loves his country and is truly divided on where we're at right now. Chris, did you ever think in all your years that you would ever have to step on a path that you never understood, brother?
No, not really. It's definitely a strange time. And I don't, you know, that's why I said even in the last few weeks, I've educated myself. I've done more reading than I had in many years, just because I tried to understand both sides, read both sides, you know. It is owning a gym, for one thing. I've got a lot of black students. I've got a lot of cops. So that's even, you know, like I like to talk to both of them, both sides, just so I can educate myself. So I've got a lot of very educated black people to train in my gym. And some are like the kid that you mentioned earlier, who's who you know, is pretty honest and forthright when it comes to talking about their community. I have another one who's actually a good friend of mine, but doesn't matter what you say, you know, Trump's an asshole and everyone's racist, you know? So it's a difficult conversation, but I'm absorbing both, you know, and trying to understand both. But I had an example the other day. So I got pulled over when I first moved into the place I live right now. And I was the first person to live in this apartment complex. And I got pulled over as I was pulling in, and the cop walks up to me and he says, your license plate light is out. And I said, oh, okay. I didn't even know I had a license plate light, but I'll get it taken care of. And he said, what are you doing here? And I said, I live here. And he said, no, you don't. And I said, yeah, I live here. He goes, no one lives here yet. And I said, I'm the only person that lives here. I can walk you up to my door and open it for you. And he started walking around kind of being a jerk, you know, while I was sitting there, I text a buddy of mine who's a cop in the same city, and the cop text him. And the guy came back up and was nice to me and whatever and let me go. That exact same situation, if it had happened to a black person, 100% would have said it was racist. And what it really was just a dick cop who had a control problem. You know, he had a little bit of an ego and was trying to harass me a little bit. But it wasn't because I was white. It wasn't because I was black. It was just because that's the problem with a lot of the officers now, you know, they resort to that out of fear. I think a lot of times because they are very undertrained, vastly undertrained. And, that's why I'm trying to educate them as much as I can and offer free training for them to change that confidence. You know, the confidence that comes from martial arts is very different than the confidence even putting a gun in somebody's hand, you know? And so, I would like to change. I think it would change a lot of the outcomes of some of these situations, but I wish people would understand that not every interaction, not every, you know, thing is a racial thing, because it happens as well. But I've been arrested. So going back to my teenage years, I've probably been arrested, I don't know, 15 times. You know, I was a punk kid. I got in trouble a lot, nothing crazy, but I got in trouble a lot. And then I also got, when I first started driving, I was broke and got, driving, failure to pay a ticket turned into a warrant, got arrested, failure to pay a fine, got arrested, driving on a suspended license, got arrested. And sometimes they were assholes to me. Sometimes they were cool. But the difference was, even when they were assholes, I was still cool. So as respectful, I was constantly respectful. I got arrested, you know, I went through the processing system and I got released, ended up paying my fine, you know, got it all taken care of. It's been years and years and years since that happened. But the difference is, man, is how I'd imagine if I ran, I'd have got the shit kicked out of me. If I turned to shoot somebody with a taser, I'd have probably got shot. You know, it's just the difference is, almost every single situation we're looking at, people are resisting arrest, and that then causes the tension between the cop and the suspect. But then the cop isn't fully trained, so the resort is the gun, right? Like, I even have cops who I've told in the past, I said, "What do you do? You run into someone like me? Like, I'm gonna, you know, I would take you out if I was a bad guy. Oh, I'd shoot you. I just pull my gun on you." And that's always the first thing, because they can't do anything to me. And even I guess a trained cop is still going to have a hard time with me, but your typical person, you know, who's trained, they need better training. They need a lot better training. And 1 week out of the year, 1 day out of the year, that's not enough.
You know, I have to agree with you. You know, back when I went through the Sheriff's Academy 25 years ago, we were taught never to pull our gun. I mean, that was your last line of defense, was to pull your gun. But I think if the system was to give a little bit more pay, educate the officers a lot better, and be more stringent on who they let become cadets, I think it would make a huge difference. Because let's face it, anybody can become a police officer nowadays. I think what they need to do is make the job more desirable, give them better pay, and you're going to get a better you're going to get a better employee, you're going to get a better civil servant, you're going to get a better aspect for your community. You know, I go back to 23 years in Springfield, Missouri. I came from the West Coast. I had my master's in engineering science. I got a very good job here. I moved into an all-white community. You know, so people can say, oh, well, you don't know. I do know what it's like to be called nigger and told to get out of your car and be harassed by the police. Because you come to Springfield, Missouri 23 years ago, trust me, and live where I live, you're gonna understand what I'm talking about. But times have changed, and equality has gotten better. I love where I live now. I hated it when I first came here, but I got to tell you, we didn't have riots here. We don't have people going around hating on each other because of their skin color. We don't have people, you know, just causing chaos in the streets like the major cities do. You look at most of the cities and states that have all this rioting, they're all Democratic for the most part. But one thing I think people are missing the picture on, they're blaming Trump, but when the coronavirus hit, he signed a declaration of emergency. That takes the federal government completely out of the picture unless they have to put in the military. What it did do was make the governors responsible for their own state. And now you see what happens when we put the governors in charge of their own state. They're incapable of running, you know, the state that they were duly elected to. You
look
at
Seattle,
Washington. You look at Seattle. They just gave up another 9 blocks. And, you know, I hate to say it, but the Hells Angels, the Mongols, and the Proud Boys have all put their grievances aside, and they're all headed to Seattle to create change if the governor doesn't do so.
They should be.
That's not going to be a pretty picture, bro.
Nope.
I mean, but right now, as of today, I watched videos. It's not Chaz anymore. It's now Chap, because they're having some indifferences in their so-called little country or whatever you want to call it.
Of course they are.
Well, they're strong-arming the businesses to feed them, and they've got demands, and, you know, it's just, it's ridiculous. You know, I've been to Clackamas, Oregon, and I just about got arrested for pumping my own gas. I mean, Oregon and Washington, they're both the same because they're so liberal, they're so left, I don't even think they know how to look to the right. You know, I never have been to a state that you couldn't pump your own gas. There's only two states in the United States, New Jersey and Portland, Oregon, you know. And it's like the guy came up to the car, he knocked on the window. I was with a boxing buddy of mine, and he's a pretty big guy, 6'1", 280 pounds. And the guy that knocked on the window tried opening the car, and my buddy got out the car, and he said, bro, you better back up. I'm not paying you to pump my gas. I'll beat the crap out of you. Well, the guy didn't speak English. And I put my credit card into the gas pump, started pumping my gas, and the guy comes around, and he starts trying to yank the gas thing from the thing and push me out of the way, and my boy came over and pushed him. Well, they called the police on us. We had no idea. I mean, there's no signs posted. I'd never been to that part of Oregon before. And, you know, but it goes to show you that there's so many diversities and aspects in culture that we don't understand. But we need to come together and educate each other. We need to have shows like this to show that there's people like you and me that don't see color. We see people. You know, that we have an understanding, and if we don't, we'll try to find an answer. We'll try to educate ourselves.
Sure.
But at the same time, we have to educate our communities. And I think that's where local, state, and federal government are truly falling short on educating the people. You know, I understand that people feel oppressed. I understand that they feel that there's police brutality more on one side than the other. When you look at the statistics,
They're not.
There's more white on white crime, more black on black crime than there is, you know, just white on black crime. But when you look at it, what they're doing is, and I saw this the other day, and it just totally blew my mind. I watched a show on Facebook, and they showed it in its entirety. But then I seen the same show on CNN, and they chopped the hell out of it to fit their narrative.
Yeah.
So what are people supposed to believe? What are where are people supposed to go and get the answers? You know, that is the major...
The media is garbage.
Oh, the media is definitely garbage.
Garbage.
You know? Well, that
and it's amazing that they're not ashamed of themselves because they're the one that are causing a hell of a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. It's a shame. Well, why do you think I do shows like this? Because I want people to understand that not everybody hates everybody. Not everybody is bigoted. And, Chris, you came from a long life, and you still are in the sport, but have you ever had racial inequality in the sport?
What do you mean? Against myself?
Yeah.
No, no. Not...
And, you know, I've asked the same thing of black fighters in the UFC and Bellator and many other promotions, and they all say no. So why is a sport that everybody seems...
I mean, I've been treated a certain way in the jiu-jitsu world because I wasn't Brazilian.
Well, yeah, I can understand that. But you get my point. You know, if a sport that we love and we live and we breathe and we eat this stuff, people seem barbaric, but yet we don't have any racial issues in our sport, then the sport can be an example for the world. And, you know, my show is a sports show, but I like also showing people different aspects of life. I like letting people share their thoughts, how they feel, and let them explain to the world who they are. You know, the sad part about the times that we live in now is it just breaks my heart that they're tearing apart a country that I love. They're tearing apart a country that your parents, your grandparents, my grandparents, and everybody else's worked so hard to build, and they're tearing it down without even a thought. And like I said earlier, no matter how ugly history is, erasing it isn't going to change the situation.
No.
Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, more than the fact that they're tearing it down isn't as disappointing to me as the fact that we're letting them tear it down. That no one has stepped in yet, that this isn't being stopped. We are sitting back, letting them do whatever they want to do, and everyone's afraid to step in and retaliate with force. But force is the only thing that's going to stop it. Telling them not to is not going to stop it.
You know,
unfortunately, but that's true.
Oh, it's the absolute truth. You know, in the just about 17 years that I've been doing a radio show, I've dealt with hate. I can live with it. But to the 8 individuals that are now under arrest for threatening my wife and my son and threatening to hang me from a tree, you know, when I was first contacted by the state troopers and a detective, because they did it on a federally regulated page, and of course they took it as a credible threat. And I didn't even know about it. How I found about it was through law enforcement. And I told them, I said, well, I don't want them arrested. I said, I want to go in front of the judge and have them each been given 5,000 hours of community diversity programs. You know, so they can educate themselves on other races. Well, I didn't realize that it was taken out of the state's hand and put into the federal government's hand. And when it comes to the federal government, there is no plea bargain. There's a minimum,
yeah,
and there's a maximum. So each person that had threatened my family is now facing 15 to 40 years. So people, creating hate isn't always the best answer. You know, my phone number is public. My page is public. You can come at me all you want, but don't come after my family. You know, I'll be willing to sit down and discuss any problem in the world with you. We could debate, and we can walk away without hate. But threatening another man's family, you better be glad the police got a hold of you before my fighter friends got a hold of you, because about 350 fighters called me and said, let's go handle business right now, including Rami Zayden Ibrahim, the son of Palestine. And, you know, I just try to keep it real, Chris. I try to share the fighters the best way I can. I try to, you know, share whatever story I'm telling the best way I can. But one thing you don't do is attack my family, because then we have a problem. You know, Chris, if there was a message of unity that you could say to the people from your heart in these dark times, what would that message be?
Man, that's a tough one right now. I honestly, I just wish that people could take things on an individual case-to-case basis, you know, and not lump everyone into one, whether it's everyone that's black, everyone that's white, everyone that's Hispanic, everyone that's, you know, whatever, and not think that everything and everyone is about race both ways. You know, I think the only, and to be honest, you know, it's going to have to come from both sides. It can't just be white people not being racist, because like I said, there's as many black people that are racist toward white people now because of what they've been told their past was, you know what I mean? Like, and it's going to go back and forth forever. And the sad thing is, it is a free country. It's freedom of speech. People can be racist if they want to be racist, and there's nothing we can do about that. If you want to go to the police, my request would be that we do a lot more screening when hiring the police, doing a lot more, you know, background and emotional investigation and things like that to make sure that it's not in the police department. But on a person-to-person basis, there's nothing that's ever going to, you know, there's nothing we can do about that except for continually try to improve, but on a case-to-case basis, not lumping everyone into one. And I think that's the only way. You can say, you know, what's his name said, we're all one, Genki Sudo, you know, same thing. We are all one, but everyone doesn't have the same thought process and have the same thoughts and the same mind frame. So it can't be, you know, we can't lump everyone in to the same category all the time. So everything needs to be on a personalized case-to-case basis. And the benefit of the doubt, man, there's got to be some sort of benefit of the doubt coming from the other side so that we can continue to improve and help each other.
Yeah, well said, Professor. You know, and I just want to add to, you know, people, like I said earlier, you wouldn't do what the police do for $38,000 a year. So defunding and wanting to abolish the police isn't the answer. What we need to do is up the pay to make it a desirable position. Make it to where somebody that is competent wants that job and is willing to do that job. And like Chris said, educate them better. And don't just let anybody off the street join the police force. And I'm a firm believer, and I've seen a lot of this in the last few days. And Chris, I know you've already been doing it, but I see a lot more people talking about it. And some states have even went to reform in this aspect. They're making it mandatory for their officers to take jiu-jitsu classes. You know, I think that's a tremendous aspect that is being implied. What are your thoughts for that type of reform being constructed across the country?
Oh, I think it's 100% mandatory, or should be 100% mandatory. It is a game changer. You know, even the scuffle that happened the other night where the guy ended up dead, the two cops that tried to scramble with him were so lost. One guy tried to jump on his back and fell off the top. The other guy laid there and got mounted. Like, they just had no knowledge of what to do in that position. And, you know, those are things that would have never gotten past that position had you had a skilled guy on top. You know, he'd have never got up. He'd have got handcuffed, and that'd have been the end of it. So I think it is. I've said it for years, man. I've said it for years that it should be a mandatory. I used to teach the Laguna Beach PD, SWAT team, Irvine PD, and SWAT team in California. You know, and now I'm training a lot of police officers out here and trying to expand that. And I don't even care. I'm not even trying to get paid. I'll go to the departments and teach for free. I just want everyone to start to become educated on this sport and learn the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, learn the wrestling and Jiu-Jitsu and control aspect of everything. You know, I think it would change the outcome of a lot of these situations.
I completely agree with you. You know, one thing that I want to add, and then we'll kind of wrap things up because I've had you on longer than I told you I would, and I know it's late for you, but, you know, the other day there was a young white man that the police officer had his knee in his back, his face in the ground, and the officers, you can hear them in the video laughing. They just thought the gentleman was drunk or on something, and they didn't realize that the young man had perished while they had their knee in his back.
Yeah.
But the point I'm getting at, it isn't just happening to the black community.
No.
It's happening to the white community. Major reform needs to happen on all levels, like I said earlier. And us having discussions like this only open your mind, hopefully, and broaden the thoughts that you have. Because, you know what, we all have to live together. We all have to coexist. We may not like each other, but don't let color make us more biased. Don't let color destroy us as human beings, because I think everybody's beautiful in their walk. I think everybody can add value to life. I think we just have to find our voice and share it the most eloquent way we can.
For sure.
You know, Professor Brennan, you truly are a tremendous man in your walk. Each and every time you come on the show with me, I'm truly honored, because you don't go on very many shows and you don't express yourself very much on that aspect. So for me, it's a blessing to be able to sit down and get a greater understanding of who you are, what your thoughts are on politics and in life and in sport. And I'm the one that actually gets to take away the knowledge, because I've interviewed thousands of fighters and I'm the one that wins. I let you guys share your voice, but I'm the one that gains the knowledge. But, sir, you truly are a rarity in your walk, and what you do for the sport is second to none. I'm still mad that Lucas hasn't got his fight. Hopefully that's going to be coming soon. You know,
It was scheduled for the 17th of July. It's going to be a couple weeks later, but it'll be in California now.
I thought, that was in Vegas that just put it out another 90 days. So, yeah, California might be popping. But I know in Vegas they put another 90-day restriction on events. Yeah,
yeah,
in Vegas they did. Hopefully they won't do that in California. Hopefully they'll go to stage 2 or stage 3, wherever the hell we're at. Quarantine has got us all not even knowing what day it is. But, Professor, thank you for being such a profound voice. Not just
thank you very much. I appreciate it.
But in life, you've made a difference, and your boys are tremendous. When the time is right, I would love to have you and your boys back on, and we'll do a family show, and we'll show people that, you know, there is hope after the darkness, because I think there is light at the end of the tunnel. We just have to keep educating each other. You know, I'm going to hand the mic to you, Professor. If there's anything you would like to add to the show, the floor is yours, sir.
Man, I just, you know, again, I just can't wait till all this is over. If anybody, black, white, brown, yellow, purple, want to message me and talk, I'm open to talking. I had an amazing conversation with an African-American person the other day on the phone for over an hour and a half. And it was enlightenment for both of us. So if anybody feels like messaging me and talking about this to get my side or want an ear to listen to your side, by all means, send me a message on Instagram or Facebook and we can talk about it. Other than that, man, hope everyone stays safe and we come out of this, you know, okay.
Most definitely. I pray for you and your family. If you want to reach out to two tremendous, you know, fighters, Jamal Pogues is under Geodetti Stevenson and the other is Jalen Turner. He's in the UFC. I tell you what, they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Those two have. I tell you what, I learned a lot from them too when it comes to the situation that we're in. And to the people that are my age and want to be closed-minded, don't be. Open your mind up. Be willing to listen. Because you'll be like me. You'll find yourself realizing that an old dog can learn new tricks. With that being
awesome.
Said... Thank you, Professor Brennan. You truly are an amazing man. Give your family a hug for me, and I can't wait to see your house when it's finished, bro.
Thank you. I'm excited. Thank you.
All right. God bless you, sir.
I'll talk to you soon.
You have a good night. All right. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, the West Side Strangler, Mr. Chris Brennan. You got to love the man. He's offering for any person of color to call him. He's willing to listen. He's willing to understand. He wants to get a better comprehension of what is going on in society as he sees no color. I want to thank both my guests, Jamal Pogues, tremendous young man. Chris Brennan, if you don't know who he is, I can't help you there. No, I'm joking. He's one of the greatest legends in the sport. He's the creator of No-Gi Jiu-Jitsu. He's a tremendous father, a tremendous brother, and a man I truly admire and respect. The same with Jamal. You know, the reason I do these shows is to open up everybody's mind and get a little bit better perspective into where our country is and where it's going. On that note, I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Sisteran and Juan Ramirez, the 86ers with Alfred and Freddie, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice, and One More Round with Mark and Jacob Sisteran. Truly an honor, and I'm going to be adding another sponsor here shortly. I tell you people, create unity, compassion, and love. With that being said, you have a good night, and God bless.
I'm in the booth. I'm in the booth. Say something on the mic. Booth. Say something heavy.
Oh, yo, that's what I'm talking about. My young boy up in the booth. He getting ready to kick it live.
Go! Whip for might get deported. Fish me alive, less than anointed. Broke this at 111, recorded. Clock struck 12, bank on water. Might sound with Stoney just for some stock, nigga. Still independent, been in the lot, nigga. Cream on the seats, cream of the crop, nigga. Had to wait for the heat, then whip the yacht, nigga.